Hey guys, Kevin Fishbane here from PFW Chicago Football Podcast. Want to talk to you about our sponsor, Loot Crate. If you go to lootcrate.com/Shaw, S-H-A-W, and use Shaw as your promo code, you can get $3 off your first crate. And I know you guys are all wondering what's in this month's crate. If you haven't been paying attention, it's October. We're talking horror because of Halloween. We got lots of items in this month's crate that you can get $3 off with that Shaw promo code. The Walking Dead, Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th. We got decorations, I'm sure, in that crate for you, for your home. T-shirt comes in every crate. These things are really cool for you pop culture geek and gamer aficionados alike. So head over to lootcrate.com. Use that promo code SHAW, S-H-A-W, $3 off your first crate, and enjoy October's crate filled with horror. Welcome to a very sleepy edition of PFW's Chicago Football Podcast. Kevin Fishbane here with my producers Dan Mott and John Solly. Why is it sleepy? Well, we are recording this on Tuesday afternoon, and at least John and I stayed up for the entire Cubs game.
It is sleepy and it is cranky.
Cranky and sleepy. That's what Connor Gillespie will do to you after the Giants beat the Cubs. But hey, if you're listening to this on Wednesday morning or Thursday, maybe the Cubs have already advanced to the NLCS. We can hope that. But we are here to talk Bears with you. Not that that is going to make you any less cranky or sleepy. But we like to, of course, have fun and talk about the Chicago Bears. Remember, you can find us on Twitter at Bears_Insider. I am at K Fishbane. All of our work is online at ProFootballWeekly.com/Bears. Thanks to Humphreys McGee for that awesome intro music. And be sure to subscribe on iTunes to PFW Chicago Podcast and give us a 5-star rating. Those are the only ratings iTunes will accept. If you even try to click a 3 or 4-star, iTunes will just say no. So bypass that. Click the 5th star. Write in your review why you love us so much. And we'd really appreciate it. So let's talk a little bit Bears-Colts quickly before we transition into Bears-Jaguars. In a few minutes, we'll talk about Jacksonville with Ryan O'Halloran, Jaguars beat writer for the Florida Times Union. And John, it was a game of missed opportunities. It was a game where on offense, the Bears had 522 yards, which was their most yards of offense in team history in a loss. They only scored 23 points, and two times they were inside the 10-yard line, had to settle for field goals. They had 10 penalties. We'll talk about the final play in a minute, but the defensive side of the ball, they had 5 sacks, which was a season high. But then you go back and watch the tape, and there were some plays that Andrew Luck had plenty of time in the pocket to find his receivers. 8 plays of 20 yards or more for Indianapolis. He converted on 3rd and 12, 3rd and 11, and 3rd and 14 in that game. Receivers were wide open all day, tight ends as well. So you can be happy about the pass rush playing better. The third down defense is pretty good, too, thanks to that pass rush. But in the end, the Colts still scored a fair amount of points, and it was a win for Indianapolis.
You can also find that box score in the Loot Crate box of horrors. Just
there you go. Use our promo code SHAW, S-H-A-W, lootcrate.com/SHAW. And, John, I will tell you that I watched the game from the Lucas Oil Stadium press box.
Did you get hot dogs?
There were hot dogs at halftime. However, I had pizza and a salad because in my way, like...
It's balanced,
the
right?
Salad
cancels out the pizza.
The salad that I doused in Caesar dressing counteracts pizza. For those who are unfamiliar, John Fox, not thrilled about our critiquing of the final play, made a comment about how comfortable it is for reporters to see it in a hot dog-laden press box.
Like, are you just swimming in hot dogs?
Swimming in hot there? Dogs while watching the game. In that cushy Lucas Oil press box. But let's talk the defense. Yeah, the pass rush played well. I don't really know what the situation was in coverage. I don't know why there were so many times guys were left wide open, aside from Andrew Luck having a lot of time. But when I look at the defense, it's like, okay, you know, you lost Bryce Callahan in the second half. Your safeties are an issue right now. You don't have Eddie Goldman pushing the pocket. You don't have Pernell McPhee. You did not have Leonard Floyd in this game. So it's not that it's a waste to talk about the defense, but look, you're only going to get what you're going to get going against Andrew Luck and that group.
Yeah, and you know the 5 sacks, I think it's a bit of a misleading thing because the Colts' offensive line is really one of the worst
Very bad.
In football. And Andrew Luck will always run into sacks because he is always looking to find time. He's going to use his legs. And just by that nature, he's going to run into some sacks. You combine that with a bad offensive line. And yeah, the Bears, I'm not saying they should have had 5 sacks, but I think it's a bit misleading to call that a success because I think that Andrew Luck just sort of runs into that every once in a while.
Before we get to the way that the Bears played on offense, I want to talk about Brian Hoyer and Alshon Jeffrey. You guys watched the game on Fox. Was the sun annoying? The way it was peeking through, they had the roof open, which they don't do very often in Indianapolis.
It's just strange.
Yeah, it's odd because you got the shadows and
There are shadows and just sort of random spots and it's it's a domed stadium, but. Right. There's like
Hub was not happy about it.
Oh, I'm shocked by this.
Hub was not thrilled with it. But, I think that one of the things that was funny when I went back and watched the tape, it was hard to find screenshots that showed very clearly what I was trying to show the fans.
Yeah, you have an excellent All-22 breakdown up, but there are a couple photos where it's just sort of like, no wonder this is kind of difficult to do because there are just random spots where you can't see anything. So,
by the way, you can see that All-22 slideshow at profootballweekly.com/bears. And by the way, add us on Snapchat, Bears_Insider. I had some Snapchats from Lucas Oil Stadium. All right, let's get to Hoyer Jeffrey, and then I actually have an Indianapolis travel story for you guys, and then we'll
get to
Jacksonville. So Hoyer has a great game. 397 yards. He was efficient. He still hasn't thrown a pick. Alshon Jeffrey had one target in the first half. Then finally Hoyer hits him for the 38-yarder and then got to him a little bit more. And the last play of the game, you can go on my Twitter at KFishbane and go check out the All-22 slideshow. We break down the last play. You've all seen it. I already got people complaining that we were, beating a dead horse here with it. But look, it was a key play, and I think it illustrates the Hoyer versus Cutler situation. Cutler would have gone to Jeffrey on that. He would have taken a chance. Maybe he would have thrown it away. Maybe he would have thrown a pick. But Hoyer, in that situation, the Colts did a good job disguising their coverage. It did look like cover two before the snap. The safety on Alshon Jeffrey's side moved in at the snap, leaving Jeffrey alone. Hoyer threw over the middle of the field, incomplete. There were 4 Colts defenders there. The right read would have been throwing Alshon Jeffrey. And you wonder, is that the ultimate difference? And what would you prefer? Because I've seen people say, I'd still prefer Brian Hoyer because he's not turning the ball over and he's keeping the offense in games. I don't want to get into the whole politics of John Fox not telling us anything or the contract. I'm just looking at Cutler versus Hoyer right now. And, I think we saw, maybe why, Cutler is who he is. And the reason that, are the Bears going to see Hoyer start taking more chances after the way that game ended?
I feel like Sunday was sort of the perfect encapsulation of who Brian Hoyer is as a quarterback. He's going to take what the defense gives him, and he did an excellent job of that throughout the entire game. Like you said, throwing for almost 400 yards. Him and Cam Meredith, you see that there's certainly good timing between the two, and he did not find Alshon Jeffrey when he needed to. But I think ultimately you see him come up short because there's a ceiling on what Brian Hoyer can do, and that last throw is certainly one of those things that you would expect a successful quarterback to do. But now there's evidence that he can't. And I think it shows that there are limitations on what Brian Hoyer can do.
Let's see what he does against Jacksonville this week. This is a secondary, which is better than Indianapolis's group.
That's not saying much.
They'll challenge him a little bit more, but he should have a lot of confidence. Offensive line, by the way, is playing fantastic football. They kept him clean. Jordan Howard, he had a huge game, 111 yards, 57-yard run.
He is a bell cow running back.
They're treating him that way.
Mm-hmm.
He played 63 of the 66 snaps. Now, I do wonder, I've always, this is a little meatheady. Why not have a two-back setup? Why don't you put Kadeem Carey in the field at all? But when you have Royal and Miller and Jeffrey and the way Meredith is playing, you don't need it.
Yeah, those are guys you want on the field, too.
Last year, it was a common conversation topic because all your receivers were hurt. Mm-hmm. So, you know, why not get the extra back on the field? So I'm on my way to Indianapolis. Hotel calls, says your room is out of order.
What does that even mean?
I don't know. I didn't ask. We put you in a new hotel. And it's called the Alexander in Indianapolis. And I have no idea where this is, what this is. Beautiful hotel.
Oh, so it was an upgrade.
So like a trendy, I was way not trendy enough to be there. I like lumbered in my sweatshirt, you know, and you know, my bags after sitting in a car for three and a half hours. And, you know, there's like all these nice dressed people walking around and yeah.
A little too classy for you?
It wasn't so much it was classy. It just seemed like
trendy.
Yeah, it was kind of like that new bar that comes to River North that you're like, oh, like I could – that looks pretty cool.
Was everything written on a chalkboard?
It wasn't that trendy.
Okay.
But it was an interesting travel experience. I have not had that in my Bears travels.
So can you name where you were supposed to stay?
I was supposed to stay at a Marriott property.
Okay.
Which I generally do while I'm on the road. This was not a Marriott property. So,
but they hooked you up. They
hooked me up. It was a nice walk to the stadium on Saturday morning or Sunday morning, which somebody asked me on my way over, hey, good luck on your test today. Because I'm wearing my backpack and like wearing nice clothes, walking by tailgaters.
Is this person walking by you or was it like shouted at you?
They were at a tailgate and I just walked by and said, hey, man, good luck on your test. So thanks, brah. Appreciate it.
Indiana has the nicest trash talkers.
Yeah. I love Indianapolis. If anybody hasn't been down there, it's a great place to go for a sporting event. Everything's super close. Good restaurants down there. Fun watching the Cubs with some of the other guys. The restaurant was full of Cub fans. They had the audio on, so that was a good time. The game itself, the game was exciting.
It was entertaining.
Yeah, it was much more entertaining than the Lions-Bears game. Now the question is, facing a somewhat similar team in the last 2 weeks, we can get a high entertainment value this Sunday at Soldier Field when the Jacksonville Jaguars come to town. And it's time to go behind enemy lines to talk about the Jaguars with Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times-Union. All right, it's time to go inside the Jacksonville Jaguars as we go behind enemy lines with Ryan O'Halloran. He covers the Jaguars for the Florida Times-Union. And, Ryan, I like to sometimes bring listeners a little bit behind the curtain and what it's like on the beat and covering a team, talk about journalism in addition to football. So I'll start with a very vague question. What is it like covering the Jaguars?
Well, I started covering the team in 2012. And they've won 14 games. So that's the downside. But from a journalism perspective, it's a lot different than my previous job, which I covered the Redskins for 8 years, which is probably a market a lot like Chicago in terms of its depth. Here in Jacksonville, it's we have three writers assigned to the team every day, but we're the only newspaper in town. The other reporters are ESPN has one, Associated Press has one, and then there's a couple of TVs. So what that allows you is a lot more one-on-one time with players, more one-on-one time with assistant coaches, which are available down here, including the coordinators, and you can really tell some stories. The other side of that, which I don't mind, is as we know, players and coaches read a lot. Well, there's not much to read down here except for us, so if they have a problem, you're going to hear about it relatively quickly, and I like that part as well.
Oh, you know, I actually have not been to Jacksonville, but you're making it sound like a wonderful city when it comes to journalism compared to what we deal with a little bit in Chicago. And I'm also curious, somewhat along the same lines as Gus Bradley, from an outsider's perspective, I've always respected Gus Bradley's work. I thought he was obviously did great stuff in Seattle. I've always thought he's been a bit of a breath of fresh air compared to other NFL coaches. And also, I've had to cover John Fox for 1.5 seasons now. Jacksonville is a bit of a unique situation, Ryan, where you look at Gus Bradley's record, you look at the half-life for coaches around the league, and it is pretty remarkable that he's still there. But obviously, the you know, there's a good rapport there with the ownership and him. But what is the situation this season with this coaching staff and what this team needs to do?
Well, on the starting point with Gus is he's unlike any other head coach I've covered, and it's for the better. I'm able to ask him questions that are second guessing him to no end. He doesn't take it personally. So explain things, and that really helps me as a reporter. And as for this coaching staff, the Indianapolis game in London was gigantic. If they would have started 0-4, that would have included a loss against the awful Colts. And who knows what Shad Khan would have done during that two-week break. Now that they have won a game, they have no right to exhale. You know, you look at the rosters, they have a lot. I think they have some more talent in Chicago because the Bears are banged up. And it's the second year of that program compared to the fourth year here. So this is a game that they have to win in order to stay relevant. This is an awful division, so it's right there in front of them. If they can win some of these games, they can play meaningful football in December, and that's what ownership is looking for. If this team is going into mid-December and they're thinking about their draft position, it's probably going to be other people making the decision. If not, this staff could get a fifth year.
And you mentioned the Indianapolis game, and I got a chance to see the Colts up close in person on Sunday, and I saw how bad they are as well. Of course, the Bears are worse considering they lost to them. But even look, you can only control so much. So Blake Bortles, that's the team he played, and that's the team he played well against in London. What worked for Blake Bortles? Like that, what was better for him against Indianapolis compared to the first few games this season?
Well, I think three things were the key against the Colts. One, they had a running game. They were 31st in run game through the first 3 weeks. Couldn't get it established, and that takes away play action, which wants to be a primary tenet of this offense. Second of all, he played turnover free. It does wonders when you don't turn it over in this league. And the third thing is he was willing to scramble. It's almost like the first couple of games, he'd been listening to the coaching all offseason and said, okay, throw the ball, take what's there, don't risk myself. Well, he sort of threw that into the ocean in London, and he was very aggressive in terms of his scrambling without taking the big hit. So those three together was why he played his best game of the season.
I want to backtrack a bit. I'm sure you get this a lot because of you're covering the Jaguars. What do the players think about the yearly London game?
I mean, it's a necessary evil at this point. You know, these guys know what they sign up for. And the downside about Jacksonville is that you have to fly everywhere. For a media person covering this team, we have 11 flying road trips this year. It seems like we're always going through Atlanta on a Monday morning. It's a little easier for the players, but the way they have this designed is they leave Thursday night and they arrive Friday morning in London. So they're spending two nights in a hotel. So, and they know they have the bye weekend after it. So from a player's perspective, you know, if they ever have a team in London, regardless of who it is, it's going to be a colossal failure because who's going to want to play there? But if part of your contract is playing one game a year over there, you suck it up for the year and enjoy the scenery for, you know, however long you're there.
Yeah, absolutely. And here we are in Chicago, the Bears don't have to fly anywhere for about a six-week span. And as you know from when you covered Washington, that was a team you could drive a lot to some games. Let's get back to this Jaguars roster and trying to kind of break down the matchup here. The Bears, as you know, very young in the secondary. Andrew Luck picked them apart a little bit. The Allens, Robinson and Hearns, what do those two guys do best? How kind of do they stress opposing secondaries?
Al Robinson is their best player on the team. The Jaguars have to start treating him like they know he's that good because he is. And he doesn't need to be open to catch the ball. He can win a lot of the 50-50 matchups with his height and his jumping ability. And he's very good on third down in terms of finding a pocket in the zone, knowing where the sticks are. I think they got to get Allen Hurns more involved. He had the 42-yard touchdown against the Colts. That was on a 4-yard out pattern. A lot of his other stuff is over the middle, and they're just making it too tough on him. He's always taking hits. So they're seeing a lot of cover two, which takes away some of the deep balls. But if they get that run game going, you get that strong safety into the box, and they can really go downfield because this is a team last year that was tied to the league lead in passes of over 25 yards. They're not headed in that direction this year. So Robinson, downfield, Hearns, a lot of the medium, the intermediate stuff, do some things after the catch. That's the best way for this offense to attack any defense.
Let's talk about Jacksonville's defense. Miles Jack and Jalen Ramsey. I think a lot of Bears fans were kind of excited when Miles Jack slipped in the first round. They thought they might have a chance at him. What have been the early impressions of those two guys and what they've been able to bring to the D?
Well, Ramsey is an every snap player. If you had to rank their corners right now, he's at the top of the list. You know, teams are still throwing at him. He's still giving up some completions, but he can tackle after the catch, and he has very good makeup speed. This is a cover three team most of the time, so he knows how to converge on the ball carrier in the run game, and also if there's a screen pass, he can shed his guy. They're bringing Miles Jack along slowly because they can. Maybe by this point of the season, they thought he would have replaced Paul Posluszny in the middle or Talvin Smith on the weak side. But those two guys have answered that challenge, and they played well. Miles Jack played strong side against Indianapolis, 23 snaps for Dan Scuda, who was hurt. So, you know, with Miles, is they drafted him in the second round, so they're almost saying, okay, we sort of have the luxury of taking him along slowly. He's probably going to be their future Mike, but for now, he may play a little strong side against Chicago, or he may not play at all on defense.
And back to journalism, I got to ask, was that your most read story, the one on Miles Jack, the reprinted version, I should say?
That's funny. I had no idea what was going on last week because I was out of town, and my brother sent me a screenshot of the Dan Patrick show. And this shows you how dumb I am. I had to read it like three times to know what was the funny part about it. I was like, what are they talking about? But yeah, it's Orlando Sentinel took our story and ran their own little cute headline. But even I got an email from Miles' mom saying, hey, we're so used to it as a family. So probably not the first time. So at least they have a sense of humor about it.
Well, that's fun. Our listeners can just Google Miles Jack headline. And you know what? Go read the story on the Florida Times Union website as you're at it. There you go.
Hell of a story, too, by the way. I wrote it in like literally 7 minutes.
Well, there you go. Ryan O'Halloran here talking Jaguars from Florida Times Union. Just a few more. Where right now would you say is kind of the biggest weakness in Jacksonville's defense that they have to kind of probably spend the bye week self-scouting to fix?
Two things. They stink on third down, and they're committing too many penalties. They're 29th in third down, which means something's got to give because I think Chicago's offense is also 29th. The thing about this Jaguar defense is they are the most penalized defense in the league. So they're giving teams third and shorts, third and 4 to 5, and they're converting. So if they can clean up some of their big penalties, they have 3 penalties of over 30 yards, then they'll be able to get in that third long because their pass rush is getting the job done most of the time. They're only blitzing 15% of the time, and they have 12 sacks. So the 4-man pass rush has been a pleasant surprise. But if they can clean up their penalties, that'll automatically clean up their work on third down.
Now, kind of a big picture question about this team, because I've kind of been fascinated by the drafts of the Jaguars, and I'm sure you see this from being close to the team, seeing the national attention. You know, everyone likes the draft year after year. People like what they did in free agency this year, but obviously they're still behind the eight ball. When you look at what this team, like the future is for this team, whether it's this season, next season, I mean, do you still think they're going in the right direction with what they have, and is there that sense of urgency that they still, you know, eventually all this young talent has to produce a playoff team?
Well, I don't know if they're heading in the right direction. If they beat Chicago, and you know, if they beat Chicago, which is a team they go on the road and they beat a team that's banged up and also not very good, okay, that's progress. Then you might say, okay, the arrow is pointing up. They've had 2 winning streaks in 4 years. They had a 3-gamer and a 2-gamer, so they haven't been able to sustain any of their success. Locally, at least in our paper, the expectations going into the season were a lot lower than the national vibe, who just sees the free agents and the money and the draft picks. Is they still haven't figured out their offensive line. This is year 4. They still don't create a lot of turnovers on defense in year 4. And they don't have a lot of depth in year 4. Those are big issues. So I picked this team to go 7-9. I think that will be enough to get this regime a 5th year. But in order to change that opinion, they have to do something that we don't expect. And that would include going on the road and winning a game. Once or twice this month, they have 3 of the next 4 on the road. So it's right now it's like you're they have a sense of urgency. They played like it against Indianapolis because they knew changes could be in the offing if they didn't. But the key for them is they have to keep that level of not fear, but urgency and you know, whatever adjective you want to use, because they need to win more games than just 1-3.
Yeah, yeah, and I think it's I'll say this from a Chicago's perspective. Nobody in Chicago will be that impressed if the Jaguars come into Soldier Field and win on Sunday the way the Bears have been playing. So let's wrap up with a little look at Sunday's game. You mentioned the third down. I think that's going to be an interesting matchup in terms of two bad teams on third down. Is another X factor, based on what you know about the Bears, what you know about the Jags, whether it's a player, an area of the game, that you're going to be kind of watching on Sunday as a way that it can turn things for one of the teams?
Well, will the Jaguars look at the Chicago secondary and just say, we're just going to throw it, or until they prove that they can stop it? That should be the game plan. And I think that would be one of the things is, do they feel they need to be balanced? Or for this game, do they feel like they look at Chicago's young secondary who's, you know, has struggled, and do they just go after them that way? So that would be one of the things I'm watching is they got the running game going, but is that still the best way for them to win?
Yeah, yeah, and this is going to be a third game in a row for the Bears facing a team that is not known for its defense, but has a quarterback who can sling it and some good receivers. The Bears are 1-1 as they head into Sunday's game at Soldier Field, Bears-Jaguars. Ryan, I don't think Sunday's game will be game film that coaches in the future will be showing in terms of the way good football should be played, but hopefully we'll have an exciting, maybe a high-scoring game that should be a lot of fun Sunday at Soldier Field. Right. Thanks again for joining us. And
you got to be optimistic, man.
Yeah. I am.
I'm excited, man. This is NLCS could be in town right Saturday.
That's true.
And Sunday.
That's true. It's going to be fun in Chicago.
This game will be the highlight.
There you go. Hey, look, the Bears-Colts, it was not a good game on Sunday, but it was an exciting game. It was a lot of scores, it was back and forth, came down to the final play. So, you know, I'll take that for sure. And you've covered enough Jaguars games where I'm sure you feel similarly, too.
Yeah, as long as it's interesting.
All right, Ryan, thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you Sunday at Soldier Field.
All right, take care. Thanks.
All right, big thank you to Ryan. Remember, you can follow him on Twitter at Ryan Halloran if you want to see what Jacksonville's saying about the Bears this week. Yeah, as I said to him, I find the Jaguars an interesting franchise. You know, what Shad Khan's done there, what Gus Bradley has and has not done there, the draft picks. And look, you just think the Jaguars are 1-3. Their only win is a very small victory over the Colts in London. And yeah, they're coming off a bye, but here they come to Chicago. Look, the Bears play at Green Bay in a short week, and then home against maybe the best team in the NFL, the Minnesota Vikings. If they don't beat the Jaguars, you're looking at 1-7 at the bye, which is embarrassing. I mean, injuries aside, you can't go to the bye 1-7. Not this, like 2-6 is much better, but
this is a home game against a coach who has a long track record of not winning on the road.
Yes,
frankly, just not a good team.
No, and this is a quarterback who does not protect the ball very well. Now, John, with your fantasy expertise, the Jaguars are a fun fantasy team in terms of, you know, Bortles can get those fourth quarter garbage yards.
He has been the king of garbage.
Yeah, Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns, Julius Thomas, T.J. Yeldon, who finally had his first good game against Indianapolis. These are guys you can throw in your lineup. So this is similar to ending Detroit, where the Bears' defense is going to get tested. They're going to get stressed by what Jacksonville can do.
This feels like another game where both teams are in the 20s, and there's going to be a couple of standout performances. I think Jordan Howard, you have to count him in there, and Allen Robinson. Man, I mean, he is so skilled, and T.Y. Hilton went off last week. Like we sort of said that we thought Hilton was going to get loose for one, he got loose for a couple, especially at the end there. So I think Allen Robinson, he's the key right there. The Bears need to stop him.
And I'm curious if Tracy Porter is going to man him up. He did not stick with T.Y. Hilton. Now, maybe he's limited because of his knee, and that's why he played
Hilton
just one side.
And Hilton goes in the slot a little bit more than Robinson does.
He does. He moves around. Yeah, I think Porter versus Robinson is going to be a good matchup to watch. Bears could use Bryce Callahan healthy. I mean, he looks good.
He looks good when he's out there.
Yeah, but he just can't stay healthy. Safety's got to play better.
They have to communicate.
I mean, yeah, that was
what
bad.
Happened on the sideline.
Dwayne Allen
there.
Touchdown, yeah. Fourth and goal from the one. Adrian Amos and Harold Jones-Corte had some words for each other. Chris,
did you talk to either one of them after?
I did
the game?
Not. Okay. People talked to Harold. They just said, "Look, it's the emotion of the game."
They just kind of slept it off.
You know, I don't know who was supposed to cover who. Chris Brzezinski was your guy in third down as safety, and look, Brzezinski, he's a great special teamer. He made some nice plays at safety last year. I don't know if he's the guy. I mean, look, they still don't have a center field safety. They do not have a ball hawking guy back there. And again, this is an offense that's going to take advantage of it. On the other side of the ball, Jacksonville's got Dante Fowler, Miles Jack, Jalen Ramsey, Telvin Smith's a very good player, an outside linebacker, Malik Jackson, who a lot of Bears fans wanted. But they're not playing that great. They're giving up 27.8 points a game. I mean, this is a defense that even coming off a bye, like the way the Bears are throwing the ball, they should be able to get some yards.
Malik Jackson is not living up to the contract that he got. He wasn't going to anyway, but this is not even close. Jalen Ramsey has struggled. He has been burned on more than a couple of routes early on in his career, and kind of to be expected. He's a rookie, but this is still a defense that you can go get a little bit. I want to bring it back to the Bears' safeties for a little bit. Do you foresee a change if there's another miscommunication, especially like the Allen touchdown?
Are you talking about Amos?
Maybe Amos, maybe Corte.
I don't think Amos. I mean, they already made the quote-unquote change and that Corte was only playing on rundowns. That was their move. And, you know, they just don't have guys there. They don't have, you know, they did not draft anybody to safety. They did not sign anybody to play safety. And that was their choice. And, you know, Harold Jones-Corte has not done what they've wanted him to do against the pass. So this is why they made that change. We'll see what they do against Jacksonville, which, you know, Indy was in three wide sets a lot. I don't know how often Jacksonville is going to be in that. You know, maybe, you know, HJQ is out in the field a little bit more. I don't know. But what I do know is the Bears have to win. Like I'm picking them to win because they have to win. I mean, you can't lose at home to the Jaguars.
Yeah,
especially when you're already 1-4, you can't. Like, they have to play that way. They have to go out there and realize, I know it's every game's its own game, blah blah blah. You cannot lose to the Jaguars at home. I don't care if they're coming off a bye. I don't care who's hurt. If you are the Chicago Bears, you cannot do that. You cannot let that happen, especially when you got the Packers and the Vikings coming up.
Yeah, like you said, they are staring down the barrel of 1-7, which in year two, when John Fox is supposed to turn things around, and clearly he doesn't have the roster to do that, it's an embarrassment.
The coaches would never admit they would coach or game plan with that in mind, but I think it'd be foolish for them to ignore what a game like this could mean. We'll get to our game picks in just a moment. I do want to go back to something I talked about in this podcast 5 weeks ago.
Wow. All right.
When the Bears signed Connor Barth,
ooh,
if you guys remember, my thought on this, and we talked about this with Mark Potash, was that in a vacuum, if you want to get rid of Robbie Gould and get a new kicker, you understand that. That's the way the NFL is. Robbie didn't have a great preseason. He missed some crucial kicks last year. He was making a lot of money. You look at that in a vacuum, you understand. The problem I had with the move was the timing and the way they talked about Connor Barth. Talking about a guy who had been cut, I think, two or three times in the last year, like he was Adam Vinatieri, who we saw it was still automatic at Lucas Oil Stadium. Connor Barth is not a bad kicker. Connor Barth got put in a brutal situation. It's one thing to replace Robbie Gould, you know, Chicago's favorite kicker, franchise leader in points and field goals. It's another to do it when the general manager talks about you as if you are the greatest kicker and the Bears had to do everything in their power to get you. And I don't like to overrate intangibles or the mental aspect of the game, but when you're talking about the kicking position, I think it's worth noting, and Connor Barth has not kicked well.
Yeah,
consistently. He made the 49-yarder, which was nice, but like he's got to be better because it's no fault of his own. He's got to live up to Robbie Gould. And right now, the Bears are in a situation where I would imagine they have to be looking at other kickers. But look, he's 5-for-8. He's 5-for-8 right now. You can't have that.
Let's say he struggles again. Do you think they would bring back Robbie Gould?
I've thought about that. I would be... That I don't see John Fox
capitulating
about face with that. I don't see that happening. So just something to think about. You know, you hope for Connor Barth that he turns it around and puts some, you know, stacks some games and you know, gets more consistent. But I just wanted to go back to that and remind people that this is, you know, that's, you know, look, I'm not saying he's kicking poorly because Ryan Pace put him on that pedestal, but that is a risk you get from a PR standpoint when you talk about a kicker like that.
He is kicking poorly because he is not that great of a kicker.
Right.
I mean, that's just, it's a simple fact.
So it's a good chance that Sunday's game will come down to a field goal between the Bears and the Jaguars at Soldier Field, noon kickoff on CBS. And let me get the spread for you guys, for those of you at home who like to know the spread for entertainment purposes, of
obviously.
Course. I am currently 1-4 against the spread this year. I've picked the Bears to cover spread every week.
Yeah, you have.
They have only done it one time.
They haven't been great at that.
But I am 4-1 straight up, which I don't know if you like if that's
so. Don't take Kevin's pick to Vegas, but
right.
You know, if you're hanging around your friends,
yeah,
you can use Kevin's pick.
That's fine. So, as I'm efforting this. Dan, why don't you go ahead and give us your pick for Sunday Bears Jags?
I'm gonna go Bears. I'm gonna say Bears win this one. You said you don't have the spread?
I think it's, I want to say it's 2 or 2.5 Bears.
Okay. I'm going to say Bears 21. Let's say, I'm going to keep it simple. Jags 14.
21-14. All right. That's good. Could be a hell of a defensive performance, certainly, for the Bears.
So if it's 2, 2.5, that means on a neutral field, Jaguars would be favored by a point.
Correct.
Ooh. That is not a good sign for John Fox and the Bears right now. But I agree that this is a game the Bears need. I think that they do get it done. I think this has the potential to be high scoring. So I'm going to say Bears 31, Jaguars 27.
Okay. So you got the Bears covered.
I got the Bears covered.
It is 2.5. Okay. We got over under 47. So get these guys in your fantasy lineups.
I think it goes over, and I think it's 31-27.
Okay. As I said, I'm picking the Bears. Think about picking the Jaguars to cover just to continue to
you might as well, right?
Yeah. So let's say Bears 29, Jaguars 28.
You like those odd scores.
1 point win for the Bears.
Connor Barth field goal
no,
for the win?
No. Okay. So let's say the Jags are up 28-21. Bears score. And John Fox, the last coach in the world you would ever expect to do it, does not want to go to overtime with the Jaguars, is sick of losing, goes for 2, and the Bears win by 1.
Well, now we're just, this is the tiredness here. We're just strained
from
reality.
The fatigue is coming in.
The fatigue that we are hallucinating a John Fox going for 2 in the win at home against the Jaguars.
That'd be fun, though.
That'd be entertaining.
Just to see him go for 2. Well, he doesn't need to.
I'm more entertained about him trying to explain that after the game.
And Hoyer sees Jeffrey, and Jeffrey gets the 2 points.
There you go. There you go. And
it'll be a fade.
And
too.
I'll be watching from my comfy press box seat eating a hot dog.
If you can just peel back the hot dog wrappers to watch that.
Yeah, I'll do my best. All right, that'll do it for this week's episode of PFW Chicago Football Podcast.
But we do have an announcement. We will have a live podcast. This is a live podcast we are doing on the 19th at Goal Line Sports Bar and Grill in downtown Crystal Lake. That's 85 Brink Street in downtown Crystal Lake, Goal Line Sports Bar and Grill. It is a joint podcast between this one, the PFW Chicago podcast that you're listening to right now, and the PFW Fantasy podcast. It features myself and Arthur Arkish, and we're also going to have Hub Arkish. We're going to break down Bears-Packers. We're going to give you our fantasy plays for the week, bring your questions. So we're going to help you out with your fantasy teams this week. So again, that is Goal Line Sports Bar and Grill on the 19th at 6 p.m. We're going to run until about 8. That is 85 Brink Street in downtown Crystal Lake, October 19th, 6 p.m.
Your one chance to see, one chance to see the podcast in person.
Yeah.
So that could be cool. Also, I do want to, another shout out here to a sponsor. If you go check out FanEssentials.net. All you do is pick your favorite sports team every month, and you get your team's gear shipped right to your door. They find the sports gear so you don't have to. Each fan box comes packed full with some amazing gear, Great gift idea for any sports fan, starting at $34.99. FanEssentials.net. And if you use our promo code Chicago at the checkout, you get 30% off your first month. That is FanEssentials.net, promo code Chicago. Again, thanks to Loot Crate. Go use our promo code Shaw there. Thank yous to our producers, Dan Mott and John Sally. Two more plugs for you Thursday. Get your Chicago Sun-Times, Daily Herald, and Northwest Herald for our Pro Football Weekly insert. Saturday, 10:30 a.m. WCIU. Watch Chicago Football Now as Hub, Arthur, and I break down everything Bears. Thank you again to Ryan O'Halloran talking Bears-Jaguars. Hopefully we'll have an entertaining game on Sunday. Maybe we're talking about the Cubs in the NLCS. We record this podcast next week, where we'll have some more Bears talk for you.